This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today I got a special guest with me, Crew Chat. So Tori is part of our Harvesting Nature field staff writing crew. She's helps contribute some awesome recipes and adventure stories and all that other stuff that the field staff writers help put out. So just want to take a chance, an opportunity, and get to know her and kind of what got her into the world of wild fish and game cooking, and talk a lot about cooking, because Tori is also a trained chef like me. Actually, both trained in the same part of the world, which is cool. But first, I'm going to run through some little admin notes here. So, Tori, feel free to jump in if you have any questions, but it's pretty straightforward. So, for me, new since my last podcast, spent a week up in Oregon hunting black bear, and a great experience. Put in about 40 miles over the 5 days we were hunting. Glassed a lot of ridgelines, a lot of clear cuts. And then on the fourth day, we saw bears. And then on the fifth day, Ryan from The Way We Hunt was out there. Him and Emily there with Ben and Colin. Ben, Colin, and myself. So there were five of us total. And on the fifth day, we got Ryan connected with a bear. And we spent most of the night packing it out and then the following morning. But great adventure. Look for some more videos. Short films and written articles about our experiences out in Oregon. So that was quite an adventure. Have you ever done any black bear hunting, Tori?
I've not. I would love to though.
It's a pretty neat experience. You never really realize how big they are until you got up on them. And this one was probably like 300 to 400 pounds, because we weighed all our packs as we came out each time, and we totaled like 300 something pounds of meat. So we had to drag it out of a swamp, and that took both Ryan and I all the effort we had to like drag it 6 feet to get it on a flat surface to like work on it.
I would like to probably do every kind of hunting that I can. Just a big change from where I once was, but I'm also okay with taking things slow, and I realized that it takes like, I guess, understanding certain areas before jumping, skipping parts. So I don't know if I'm ready for black bear.
I mean, you just, you don't really know till you know, I guess.
It's very true.
Yeah. I had never actually even been to the state of Oregon, when we went out, but, we decided to go. I've got kind of a little strategy for the way I go hunt public lands, and, that I've never been to and only like e-scouted. And I usually dedicate now about a week. And usually the first day is just a complete wash. And then after that, we finally, like, you judge each step as sort of a progress of, like, oh, hey, we found sign, to, like, oh, yeah, this seems like a good area, to, like, oh, there's some animals. And then finally, you know, hopefully
right.
you get the deed done. But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really great experience, too.
It was. We camped out the whole entire time. Like, I think the city of Eugene, which I flew in and out of, we only spent, I spent maybe an afternoon of one day and an evening of another there. And we were in the national forest the rest of the time. So it was pretty awesome. But let's see, I'll go ahead and hit a plug for our Adventures for Food podcast. So Corey is always on the search for guests for that. We've been putting out some great content with everyone telling their stories on those short, condensed versions that run every other Sunday here on the same podcast channel. And then our Facebook community page, too. Be sure you're hitting that up. That's a great place to go interact with the crew, with fans, share your recipes, share your hunting and fishing successes or failures, ask questions, all that. All these links are in the show notes, so be able to hit them up. And as always, if you like what we're doing, you can always buy us coffee. You know, you can buy us a cup, 2 cups, 3 cups, 4 cups, 7. That's about my daily intake. But it's one of those things keeps us going on those long, dark nights of editing podcasts and writing articles. Help say thank you for the things that you love to read and watch and listen to. Outside of that, our friends over at Allen Company, if you go over to their website, buyallen.com, that's BYALLEN.com, and shop around there. And if you find something you like, if you punch in the code HARVEST10, you'll get 10% off at checkout. So that's a cool thing going on that they have. They got some great stuff. I used a lot of their turkey hunting gear this past spring season, and although not successful in my turkey harvesting endeavors, I was, in fact, successful in my gear management endeavors, thanks to Alan. So there's that. But now I want to introduce you all to Tori. So, Tori, you've been riding now for us for about 6 months?
Maybe a year. I don't think we're closer to a year.
We're closer to a year. All right. Well,
maybe 9 months.
we'll round up. Let's call it a year. Right. But if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and like where you're from, where you kind of hang out, what got you into the wild fish and game world. Wow, that was a mouthful. Please tell us about yourself.
It's a lot. Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having me on. I'm super excited to speak. You know, I spend a lot of time by myself, so getting to speak with people that I communicate with through email a lot is pretty nice. So I am a wild game chef now. I graduated from, I say now because that's definitely, when I went to culinary school, if you'd have asked me if I was going to be a wild game chef and a hunter, I would have laughed at you. Moving on, though. So, yeah, I went to culinary school in Baton Rouge, and when I left school, I moved back home, and I've been a chef for about 15 years now, working in and around restaurants all over the area where I live, a few restaurants in Houma, Louisiana, Baton Rouge, and now I hunt and cook for hunters, mostly.
Nice. And so when you say you cook for hunters, you get out to camps, and I've seen you've done a little bit of traveling around too, cooking as well.
Yeah. So all of that kind of just started in the past 2 years, I would say. Before that, I was at Honey Break Lodge, and I left there and just kind of started building my own little path, I guess. And it's really evolved. It's been really fun, and I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing. So yeah, I it's been a growth process too. And it's almost as if I'm creating a business model, you know, for something that's not like very common. So I can't like go and look up like, you know, as a chef, you know what I'm talking about. Like you can go and like look up, this is what this chef does. This is all very new. And not a lot of people do it that I know of. there's more people doing it now than there was a year ago, and that's really exciting.
I think so. It's I think it's growing in popularity, and you know, I kind of probably hit this one over and over, but I think a lot more people are starting to pay attention to their food, give it, you know, the effects of COVID-19, the conversations about food security. Prior to that, you get more people out hunting and fishing now than in a very long time, which is it's good. So, but it's good to see people doing it in a very conscious, thoughtful manner and very food focused versus, you know, some alternatives. So,
yeah, cool. You know, I think too on the chef and, you know, restaurant industry people, that side of it, you know, COVID really rocked the boat. And I think a lot of people got brave, and I've seen a lot of chefs kind of branch out and do their own creative freelance type things. And interestingly enough, I was kind of already building this path right before COVID hit, but I think that has a lot to do with it too. So it's been fun to see. I'm excited for anyone who's getting outside and also dining outside. It's a really cool thing.
So what's been your favorite trip that you've been on, or your cooking / camping / adventure trip so far?
So far, man. So I do not, it's hard for me to compare any.
It's okay.
It really is. But so I spent a lot of time at GK Paloma Ranch, right near Eagle Pass, Texas, on the border of Mexico. I spent a lot of time there, and I was probably there 6 or 7 different times. And, I loved every moment there. It's just such wild country. I mean, it almost looks like dead, you know, the whole area. And then like going out and like photographing deer after cooking breakfast. So, and another thing is, hanging out with the guests is a really special part of that, that I actually had no idea would be something, that I enjoyed like I do. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's not that I don't like people. Maybe it's just that I like intentional small gatherings. I'm really honing in on my nichiness these days.
That's good. You gotta, you know, capitalize on those moments for sure. So what got you into the world of cooking, fishing, game?
You know, it started from, you know, just a need for nutritious foods and a desire to have healthy and nutritious foods. After I left culinary school, I had learned so much, you know, about what food really is and what its purpose is in our lives. So I just picked up hunting. I mean, it's a deeper and longer story than that. But in reality, I had a vegetarian diet for a bit through culinary school. And that was after learning, you know, kind of some of the ways that things were done in our food industry. And my way of like fighting back was, I'm not going to eat the shit, you know. And honestly, like, I was young then. I was very young, and that probably wasn't the best way, but it was cool. I learned a lot about my willpower also in that time. I mean, I learned a lot about how much willpower I actually had. And anyway, so when I moved back home, I didn't have access to Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or any of those Fresh Market, great places like that. There was like one grocery store and a Walmart. And I was like, well, this isn't going to work. So I just took the hunting, it actually took a while. People had given us meat and stuff that I'd cooked and started to taste a bit here and there. But as far as myself, like harvesting, it took some time. Gardening has always been a thing, though. You know, that was something that I immediately jumped into.
Nice. I'm a huge fan of gardening. We did. I worked on a number of like farm projects down here in the Florida Keys. I'm actually finishing up one now. But yeah, I love the gardening aspect. I think it goes hand in hand, and I think it's very common for people that care enough to go out and hunt and fish for their own food, or often at times, either foraging or growing their own as well, in addition. And I think it's they all complement each other. It just feels good.
You know, I not to get off subject a little bit, but and I've thought so much about this recently. There's something really special about even our foods when, you know, it's a very natural thing for us to appreciate things more when we work for them. Mm-hmm. And regardless of the intensity of labor or not, that is a really natural thing. And we've gotten really far away from that. So I think, and if you'd asked me, I wouldn't have been able to tell you this, you know, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. But as this whole journey of mine has evolved, that's one thing that really sticks out, is that, you know, convenience is not our friend most of the time. it's sneaky. And, you know, working for our food is also necessary, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. And I think, you know, there's definitely something to be said about, you know, a good analogy would be like buying a car, right? So when you turn 16, you buy a car, you want to hit the road and do all kinds of fun stuff. And you tend to, if you have to put sort of that sweat equity and earn the money and all that other stuff to buy the car, you're going to, the theory is you're going to take care of it more versus like somebody just being like, hey, here's a car. And you kind of don't gain the full appreciation for it. And I definitely easily transfers over to the world of food, you know.
Right.
I think especially when like, hey, you know, you're out in the spring, you're prepping your gardens, you're planting seeds, then you're actually planting things in the garden, then you're taking care of them day after day after day after day until you're ready to harvest, and then you're putting them on the plate, sharing them with your friends and family. You know, if you're in the realm of wild food, like the amount of time, effort, and energy, and often money that goes into going out to be like, I'm going to go deer hunting, or, you know, I'm going to travel to Oregon, go for black bear. Like that is unrivaled by anything else in the world of food.
It really is. And, you know, back to what you were saying, as, you know, with the car analogy, you know, I immediately thought, well, our bodies are our vehicles. Mm-hmm. They were given to us, you know, and so it's kind of like our vehicles were given to us. And now it's like, okay, so your job in life is to learn how to connect the dots and take care of yourself and utilize, take care of yourself so that you can eventually help others and assist others to help take care of them, whether it be whatever you do. So yeah, got off subject a little bit, but I was like, wow, yeah, we are the vehicles.
No. It's a great point. I like it. It's very valuable insight for sure. I have an appreciation for it, you know, and think about there's a lot of people throughout in various generations where it's easy to walk to the supermarket or, you know, pick up the phone and call. Or, I mean, now it's like I can buy groceries on my cell phone. I can get Uber Eats and get whatever. Like it completely takes right. out a lot of it. Now it's great for sometimes multitasking, but there are people who don't have the connection with the food like others do. And
right. You know, and that's another thing, like, I think sometimes there is this thing too with all of the disconnectedness that occurs. Like I feel like sometimes, you know, no matter how honest and like forthcoming I am, like on my basically on Instagram a lot of times or my website, like I still feel like people sometimes get this notion. Like I'll have someone send me a message like, oh my God, you're like out in the wild every day. And I'm like, and that always like brings me back. It brings me back home to like the importance of, you know, the balance of, yes, it's important to like share your truth and be boldly honest, but also that like, no matter what, people's perceptions are always different than each other's. Like it's kind of, and I think the same thing with food and the connectedness, and people's will and ability or desire to become more connected. So another rant.
No. I'm going to make a good segue here. You opened it up for me. So as you began your journey with wild foods and you sort of kind of started getting more involved in it, going on your hunts? When was like that sort of aha moment that you felt the emergence of that connection? Do you remember it?
I remember about the time. It was, let's see. So I would say probably, I have to sit here and think about how old I am right now. I was probably about 27, 28 years old. So I'm like 34, I think. Yeah. So I remember the time in my life and the chapter I was in. The chapter of my life that I was in was very shambled and broken, and starting anew again. Like, I'm like, okay, here we go again, you know. I had just moved back home with my kids from HOMA, and my parents. We had to move back in with my parents, and that was a pretty strenuous thing. You know, my children are now 13 and 16, but then they were much younger. So, and having to get them registered in schools in the middle of the year, it was a lot, and I felt like, what am I going to do? Like, the shit's just not working out in my life. And at the same time, I would go and I would work in kitchens and pull 16-hour days with a smile on my face, making $9 an hour sometimes, you know, and then pull 10 out. And I'm not complaining about it, because let me tell you something. I love getting in a kitchen. And I remember people saying, like, you should be making more money at some points. And I was like, I love this. I love this. This is the place. So culinary was the first, you know, in a kitchen. The mental clarity that I had in that space where all I had to do was be me and create stuff. And my fast-going mind could just wander and roll. So it's almost like when hunting came into the picture, I needed the other side of that. And I remember just like sitting in a deer stand, and I started having like all these thoughts. I would have all these thoughts just coming to my head. My phone is full of like thousands of notes of just like, some of it's just like, people are assholes, blah, 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 blah. And then some of it's like pretty philosophical shit. I'm like, where did that come from? So I was just paying attention, and that's what it's been for me. It's been a journey of paying attention and honoring the things that do that to us in whatever way, shape, or form. So, yeah, I remember that. And I've told people, like, and even before, you know, people are like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm hunting. I don't have any of the other answers, but I'm hunting. Like, you know, and like, where are you going? What are you doing? I'm like, I'm creating things. I'm hunting. And that's kind of, I'm like, okay, so I've got to put myself in this position to be amongst all these things. So that's kind of where the whole traveling and cooking, and it's worked out. So.
No, it's good. It's a cool opportunity to get to do that. And I mean, personally, I like the intersection of, you know, I grew up hunting in a very small area, like in southeastern Oklahoma. It's like you hunted there and you went to the same place every year, your family's land or friend's land or whatever, and you kind of stayed in that little area. Now that I'm an adult and I have the availability and the ability to go travel further away, now I purposely seek out more opportunities to connect sort of my love for travel, my love for food, and my love for hunting and fishing, and just to be like, hey, what really cool stuff can we do? And
yeah.
I think I try to feed all the inlets that I require to sort of find like balance in my life of like interacting with people, solitude, food, creativity, adventure, travel, all that stuff. So it's like, it's an awesome thing when it comes together in a good way.
Yeah, it really is. And, I relate to you on many levels, to everything you said. So
that's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about, so I don't know, you touched on it before, but like, kind of touching a little bit on the vegetarian side and then heading into wild game. You know, you mentioned moving back home and kind of not having availability of a lot of we'll say quality ingredients, if that's a fair word. But like, could you shed light and kind of paint a picture on how that path went? If not, it's okay.
Yeah. I've never really been a big fan of meat. I'll say that, like, growing up, I did eat meat as a kid, but I was more of like the fish a filet girl from McDonald's. So
not the double like quarter after pounder softball with games, cheese.
All of my friends were getting happy meals, and I was like, I need a fish a filet. So yeah, or whatever they're called now. So basically though, by the time I just don't eat it. I don't think people are terrible if they eat it. You know, I hate to even say that, but it is a part of who I am. So like, I have to say it. I don't like it. Sit there and think about like, I'm like, I could literally just be eating shit, or eating shit might be better than this. So, I just don't, I don't like that. So the vegetarian thing, it was definitely stemmed from learning a lot about the, different areas of our food industry and the processing and how that went down in culinary school. So I was like, guess I'm just going to see what I'm made of. I lost a lot of weight during like a very short period of time too. I remember one of my teachers meeting me in the hallway one day, and she was like, hey, will you please eat? I was like, I am. anything from an animal. Like, I was not having anything.
Oh, like, so you're like full vegan.
It was pretty so then I like gradually went into vegetarian, and then from that point on I was kind of moved back home as like pescatarian, and that was mm-hmm. always really easy. So but I still had this really big desire like to just there's always been this part of me for a very long time, and it's been very gradual and subtle at first, to like almost like, I don't want to be this fraud chef. Like, I don't want to be serving people these wholesome vegetables if they're not wholesome vegetables. Like,
yep.
I want
totally, agree 100%.
Responsibility. So like, if I'm going to serve you mac and cheese, I'm going to call it mac and cheese. I'm not going to call it like organic, all fucking grass fed, whatever, dairy, you know, like, because it's mac and cheese.
Yep.
And I do value like good quality products, and I think that everybody does, like that's a thing. But so really a lot of it stemmed from a need for food, for healthy foods, and a desire to learn, curiosity, and to not want to be a fraud. And I'm still kind of like that. Like if I'm going to cook anything, I'm going to research like everything about it. If it's my first time, you know, where was the origins of this? Who's been doing this? Whose culture am I tapping into?
That's a good one.
You know, like what is this? And then there's the other side of that, that I think, it gets to be too nitpicky when we talk about the different cultures and like, well, this is Cajun or this is Creole and this is this. And it's like, hey, your great grandmother made it. My great grandmother made it. And now we're gonna make it.
we could go deep into the Cajun versus Creole debate here.
Those things touch nerves.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they do.
You wanna hear this is a really interesting story. I touched on it. So my grandmother, I grew up in Oklahoma, right? And it was when my mother and my aunts were in high school. They had a foreign exchange student that was doing some work at university, and this was back in the 70s. And he was from Iran, and he stayed with them. I never met him. This is long, 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 long before me. Never met him, but he taught my grandmother how to cook some Iranian food, some Persian food, and she can still crank out like some really amazing Persian food. And I'm
that's
like,
"That's awesome!
This is awesome!"
Right? And so, could you imagine being like, "Oh wait, Grandma, you can't do that because that's not your culture." Like, no,
yeah,
you know, yeah, like no. That's like no, like please always cook it.
That's one of those things. We're not, I think as long as we're sort of like, I guess, properly representing it, as long as we're like in a respectful way, representing
the food and acknowledgement.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not like, hey, check out what I created on my own. You know, it's the writer's equivalent of plagiarism. Right. But yeah, it's be like, hey, I found this cookbook, or I found this recipe, or this mention of, you know, this stew from, you know, southern Mexico that I wanted to make. And, you know, yeah, I put my own spin on it, but its origins are still there.
Like, right.
I think as long as that's there, we're
you know, good. And one of the, there's a quote, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but I think about it all the time, like in different cooking situations or conversations coming up as far as culinary goes. And it's everything that you've done has already been done. Like, not that new ideas aren't valuable, but they surface in a different way. But for the most part, like, it's almost like this very humbling way. It's something about it is very humbling. Like, calm down. It's not that serious. And continue to do this and do it in your own way. But that, so everything, I mean, human existence, we're not even that old. Like,
no. And you think about concepts like that, and it's like, there's, you know, there's the commonality and the tradition and the educational aspect of it. And then at the very top of the pyramid, there's like a very few, like, highly educated, highly skilled, like, elite people
right.
in the field, that those guys are like sort of breaking ground, you know, your Escoffiers or
right.
you
know,
your Paul Prudhomme or whoever, like yeah. they're at the top of the pyramid, and then everybody else is kind of just like, it's slowly trickling down
right.
and then we're taking inspiration off them, but you never know who's going to be that next person. So
that is a good point.
Keep plugging. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
But I forgot why I said that. I say that to say that, yeah, I agree with you. Nothing, there's little that probably already hasn't been done. And not to say, like you said, there's not original ideas and concepts out there. But somebody's probably thought about it.
Right.
We want to talk some about some of your recipes that you've done on Harvesting Nature. We can run through those. Kind of do a little what inspired you to make them, kind of the process, just whatever you feel like talking. We got some time to discuss them if you like.
So Camp Hash is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I like that one too. Oh man, I'm a huge fan of hash.
Yeah.
The food.
Well, and honestly, that was something that, like, over the years, I've just kind of been doing. My dad used to make it in his own little way. You know, it's like leftover whatever, tossed in a skillet, and not necessarily your traditional hash. But as I've started, like, cooking at camps, or, you know, cooking at the camp where I hunt here, and or even, like, a big family weekend, you know, like, anytime there's potatoes or whatever, or I would also try to, like, plan my meals to where, like, there's potatoes, roasted potatoes one night that can be cold, like, left over and utilized. And then all those meats, like, you know, like, if you do a seared elk tenderloin, then dice it up and throw it in your hash. Like, so it's a beautiful thing. And I just think an egg makes everything really great.
Oh, man. So, an over easy egg is like, That's pretty close to heaven right there.
Yeah, and like I think so. Also, after a crawfish boil, that's another thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
throw a crawfish.
I use all the vegetables from crawfish boil to do hash the next day, and I even put the crawfish. I'll pick all the crawfish tail and put them in there too, and it's so good.
So do people think that you're, like, crazy when you're like, don't throw away the crawfish, I'll peel them, I'll keep them?
Yeah. I'll sit there like,
why are you doing that? I'm like, I mean,
it's like the perfect point of the party. You either, like, it's late enough that you just take, like, the couple gallon Ziploc bags home with you, because there's inevitably just about always leftovers. Or as everybody's just sitting around, you know, shooting the breeze or whatever, like, you just take a pile and you just start peeling the tails and throwing them in a bag. And it's like, You're just there still talking. You're just peeling right. crawfish tails.
Yeah, my family's like, give it to Tori. Throw an ice chest. Tori will take it home. And I like spend the whole next day peeling crawfish.
Oh, but it's so worth it.
Oh my God.
So worth it.
So worth it. Actually, not long ago, a few weeks ago, I took the lemons. So we had the lemon halves.
Uh-huh.
And I treated them as if they were like preserved lemons. And so I made a spicy, so it was spicy from the crab boil. So uh-huh. I like blended them up or processed them, I guess, in the food processor, and put honey, a little bit of Louisiana hot sauce, and some turmeric. So it was like a really bright yellow, beautiful vinaigrette. Because I was like, wow. I don't want to throw these away. So it's like this spicy, sweet, beautiful yellow. That was fun.
Man, that sounds really good. You could bottle that stuff.
I'm just like, y'all are going to throw this shit away? That's crazy.
I mean, there's so much, and people have different ways, different things they put in their boil too, but like there's a good standard. And I think it lends to doing a lot of different things with. Even like I used to save the boil water a lot and then use it later on as like stock.
Yep.
Because, you got some good flavors in there as long as you strain it out pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's so much you can do with so much stuff.
So we were talking about crawfish, and it makes me think. So I edited and we released it's a podcast episode with Shrek, who runs the Noob Spiro podcast. So he's a spear fisherman in Australia. And so they call their lobsters in Australia crayfish, which I was like, it's, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
But the thing is the picture that I found on his Instagram with it, it literally looks like a giant crawfish, but they're bright red once it's boiled, which blew my mind. And we went down a long road of talking about lobster, and we got on the topic of lobster sashimi and all this. So anyway, it was my turn for a rant.
That's, you just said, that they're not red when they're harvested. And that's something, actually, I don't remember, but I heard someone talking about that not long ago. And I was like, yeah, that's crazy. Like, cause uh-huh. we know that, cause we get live crawfish, but so lobster's the same way. Yeah. It's just kind of the same as, crabs too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess like all the crustaceans.
But it's crazy because this one lobster is in fact red. And I wonder what color it turns when you cook it, though. It
was
raw. Like he had cut it. Okay. And he was just holding it up in the picture. Like he just dove for it. And it was bright red. It looked like if you took a cooked crawfish and you put it on.
Okay.
Yeah, it grew up. It was that. Yeah, it was wild.
Okay. So I was confused. Wow. I'm going to have to go stalk him.
That's okay. I probably didn't explain it well. Well, now that we've talked about crawfish, which is awesome. So the elk pie, that's another good one you have.
So the inspiration for the elk pot pie came from I had a wealth of elk meat in my freezer. A really good friend of mine went on a hunt in Colorado. And he had tons and tons of elk meat, and he gave a lot of it to me. So my freezer was full, and I still have a freezer full of elk meat. My kids are pretty disgusted with me. They're like, if you cook elk one more time. So I'm not doing it like every night of the week now. But anyways, so yeah, I was just getting creative with it. And I think my favorite part about that meal in particular was the red wine reduction with a little smidgen of honey in it. So that was a really great thing. And then the colors of that dish was really great. Add a poached egg and you're winning. So it was cool. It was fun. And
yeah, there was a lot of cool ingredients that came together.
Yeah, and to be honest, a lot of that is just stuff that, like, I'm, like, in my fridge, and I'm like, wait, I should use this. Wait, I have a few of these left. So I'm really big on that. Most of my cooking stems from having some things that I need to use.
Yeah, it's a really cool dish. I like the use. You don't often see a lot of meat pies, and that was cool because it was kind of like an open-faced meat pie as well, which I thought was neat because you get to see everything you're eating. Sometimes you dig into a pie and you're like, "What exactly is this?" But no question there.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, it's funny because I have this there sometimes I can be fully in the zone in like this baking and pastry zone of like aesthetically pleasing and perfection, and then sometimes I'm the polar opposite. So I'm pretty sure that when I started that I was like, I'm gonna do this beautiful lattice work, and then I was like, no, I'm not. I'm ready to eat. We're hungry. So
Well, if we can, let's touch base a little bit on the bass and arugula salad we got listed here. That looks pretty good as well, or sounds good.
yeah, that was my most recent thing to prepare. I had some bass that my son and I caught, and I did jump up and go buy arugula for that recipe because I love the way it tastes, and I had some fresh raspberries that I made into a vinaigrette. So, and then pickled quail eggs, and yeah, it was a there was a lot of beautiful colors with that.
Sorry, I like the way you served it on the open on like the cutting board there. It's really cool. It brings all the ingredients like out in the open.
Yeah, I any opportunity I have to put something on like a slate or wood. I'm always looking for something that's not like a plate. I get really bored with plates.
So, what type of, if you don't mind me asking, what type of bass was it?
So that was largemouth.
Ooh, yes. My
We
favorite.
caught he caught about four that day about a month ago. And he caught four and I caught two, so he definitely kicked my butt fishing that day. But I kept some of them whole, two of them whole. And the two that I kept whole, I did salt crusted fish with those. And then what was on the salad was actually, I left the sk scaled that left the skin on and kind of left the rib cage in it too. So very light on seasoning. I just tried to keep it as healthy and basic as possible with some spritz of lemon. Turned out pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, I think it's bass has such a mild flavor. Sometimes it's pretty easy to overpower it too if you get super crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, a lot of people snub their nose at people who eat largemouth bass. I don't. I grew up eating largemouth bass. That was a huge food source for us, but there's definitely, I think, some competition fishermen and some anglers in modern times that are aghast when someone talks about eating largemouth bass, but
Is that true? I mean, I could see that. So I wonder what, I mean, do they want you to throw it back and not eat
yeah.
it, or they just don't want to
I
clean their
think they want it
fish?
to get bigger. So your last recipe that I want to hit on is rabbit sauce piquant.
Sauce piquant.
There you go. This is the accent now.
There it is. So the rabbit sauce piquant, basically, you know, I grew up with watching my grandfather and my dad like sit over a stove and babysit a roux. So every kind of meal basically that every meal that I grew up knowing, especially in reference to like Cajun, or I might screw this up, Creole. my parents or my dad and my grandfather, they really took their time with it, which is something I value now as I'm older. But I also, as a mother of children who get really hungry and do not want to sit there and watch me at a stove stir a pot of roux, I'm always looking for quicker ways to kind of speed up the process of something and also maintain the integrity of the food, especially when wild game is concerned, but also for the health benefits of everyone who gets to eat the meal. So basically, I jar roux, man. You know,
You gotta do it. You gotta
it's a
do it
great thing.
sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, that's another thing with it turned out really good, and That was actually probably my third or fourth time making a sauce piquant. And we had harvested the rabbit the day before, and I was like, it's going right in. So I really love cooking at hunting camp and being amongst my people. I feel really comfortable getting creative there. It's a little different, whereas when I go on jobs, you know, you have people with specific wants and needs, mm-hmm. and they may not want me getting all creative as much, which, you know, it is what it is.
So on this recipe, did you completely fry the rabbit, or just like brown it and then add it in and let it stew in the sauce?
So I believe I fried it in ghee. I may not have. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at that recipe in so long. But most of the time, I'll tell you this, with frog and squirrel or anything, I always try to use ghee. But because I like butter, I think butter's a great – but ghee especially, mm-hmm. just – I don't know. I think it leaves a better flavor. Anyway, so I did let it get crispy on each side, and then I kind of set them aside, and I made my sauce piquant sauce. And then I put them back in there. So that helped maintain some of the crispy outside. So it wasn't like soggy, bready stuff floating around. It worked out pretty good though. There's always things though. I mean, no matter what I'm cooking or how long I've been cooking something, there's always something that could be done different or perfected.
Nice. I like it. It's cool. It's a good recipe. I made some. The restaurant I was working at down here for a while, a couple years ago, they got an order of alligator in, and normally they would get like an alligator sausage, and instead they got like alligator tails, and they're like, what do we do with it? And I was like, I got the perfect recipe. And so I
nice.
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. That's when you get to say, yep, roots. This is my contribution, guys.
Yep. So it was good though. It was it came out really well. I think we ran it as a special, and maybe I only made like 15 or 20 of them, but we sold out by before dinner, which was I was happy about.
Nice.
Yeah.
Man, a sellout's always a good sign.
Yes. Yes, it is. 86 it.
That's right. Say it again.
As we sort of wrap up here, we're fighting through some technology issues tonight, but I guess what upcoming plans or adventures or travels are you looking forward to here in the future?
Good question. So I'm actually leaving this weekend back to Record Buck Ranch in Utopia, Texas, where I will be doing a wild game cooking demo and a little bit of field dressing for... It's a women's skills camp. Super excited about that. And after that, I will be hunkering down again and kind of scheduling things and booking things. I'm hoping sometime within the next 6 months, if not right before hunting season begins. So if not in September, I'm looking to probably in March host some kind of wilderness to table dinner and bring together a bunch of chefs in the wild and do a really exclusive dinner experience, possibly overnight camping. I'm trying really hard to piece all that together because I think that's like kind of the ultimate goal, like to get these experiences and to be a part of kind of curating and creating and inspiring people to get outside.
That's awesome. Well, let me know if you need some help or on that. I'm happy to go. I'm leaving the Florida Keys and headed to Colorado.
You've already been added to the list, my friend.
Good to know. Good to know. But yeah, I'll be able to travel a little easier here coming up, being more in a central part of the U.S. So that should be good. But outside of that, so this is kind of the point in the show where we do a sort of last thought, any misfires, alibis that we have, and I'll go ahead, since you're the guest tonight, open it up to you. Do you have a last thought you want to leave us with before we close out?
You know, there's a lot to be said for paying attention in life in general. Honestly, if that's one thing I can tell people, like if that's the one thing I've learned. in every endeavor, pay attention. That's it.
Nice. I like it. Pay attention. That's a good takeaway. Well, I really appreciate you hopping on with me tonight and battling through the technology issues that we've had. And it's been a really great show. I've enjoyed chatting about food and kind of going into some of the philosophy about food and learning more about you and sharing more about your experiences in the hunting and fishing world, which is awesome. I think you're doing a great job in the space, and I'm excited to see what else you got and cook and all the other stuff, right? Hopefully join you in cooking adventures. So a lot of fun can come from this, I think, for sure.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say, everybody else out there, thanks for listening. As always, show notes and recipes are just below. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, you'll see the links there. You can click them, go straight to it. And one last thing. What's the best way for people to connect with you if they have questions or want to make sure they're following you on social media?
Definitely Instagram is where I'm most active as far as social platforms. That's the_gatherin, no G at the end, _girl. And then also I've, my friend Ricky Folger and I have been hosting we have a club on Clubhouse where we speak with different people about their point of views in the outdoor space. And kind of also we've had some really cool chefs come on.